Welcome to the Made for Agriculture podcast with Adam, Cameron, and Emily. Today's hosts are Adam Jones and Cameron Horan.
All right, folks, welcome to another episode of the Made for Agriculture podcast. My name's Adam Jones.
And I'm Cameron Horan.
And we're back this morning. It is April 12th. The sun's up. We're pretty deep in the planting season. So we wanted to get on here and catch up with just kind of one of our in-season agronomy episodes. So I think what we're going to do this morning is we'll try to keep everything brief, but we're going to kind of go down through the crops one by one and try to get an update from everybody. So anyway, let's start with corn. So we'll kind of go around the horn with everybody on this morning, and you kind of tell me what the update is, what crop stage is, you know, how much you feel like is planting and planted, and how planting conditions are out there. So Jesse, let's start with you.
Okay. So we started planting corn probably end of March. I'd say the southern territory is probably 80% planted, if not more. Northern half, some of them guys, it's more hill ground. So some of them lower spots, even as dry as we are, stayed a little heavy, a little cooler. So they haven't done much. But man, it was as dry as we are, as much fall work we got done and early spring work got done, guys hit the ground running.
Okay, Shannon.
Yeah, so for us planting, we're probably 75-80% done overall. We've got several pockets that are completely done. And there's the area, especially to the north, I'd say north of Girard on the Kansas side, north of Lamar in Missouri, just a little bit slower getting going. Soil conditions have been on the cooler side. So we've got guys no-till work ground still that still haven't even started. So once those guys get going, we'll be pretty much wrapped up. We were running pretty good for the first half of this week, and then, you know, we got rain middle of the week, which we're never going to turn down rain, especially for the conditions we've had the last couple of years. But once guys get back in the field, it'll just be a few days left, and then we'll be done, wrapped up with corn. And for us, you know, herbicide applications, getting those on timely have been a big priority too.
Okay. Sounds good. Scott?
The central part of the state got, you know, was able to get in the fields a little bit the last couple of weeks on the more on the western side. Actually have a little bit of emergence down, you know, in the southwestern part of that region down around Adrian, Rich Hill, talking to some of the folks down that way. Over on the eastern side, they really just got going in the last few days. Some places still a little bit heavy, but I think most folks are finding somewhere to go just middle part of this week. And, you know, with the wind and everything we've had, it's not going to take much to dry out the other.
Any watch outs out there, Scott? Anything that you found that of note, I guess, kind of once we've gotten up into actual country that's actually planting hard right now?
Yeah, I mean the main ones, and I talk about this every year, but this year getting a lot of updates on the trap counts for black cutworm in particular, and you know, I know that's something we don't worry about like we did in the past when we did not have the treatments, but you know, you have to remember they still have to eat some of that to die. We are slated right now for cutting to begin tail end of this month. Most of them are indicating really the first of next month. So, you know, our advice, pyrethroids are played out on some of the insects that we deal with. And that's something I've, you know, talked a lot about the last few weeks with guys, just as we're dealing with issues in their alfalfa. But it is still very, very effective on cutworms. And, you know, just a few dollars of insurance can be huge. You know, we do still see some issues. It's usually in pockets. But when we're out looking at fields, we can find minor damage in a lot of fields. So I guess my thing is just with the money that's been spent on planters, and especially all the planter upgrades and everything we're doing to try to get perfect singulation and just a perfect seed drop and all that. And then we let a caterpillar start nipping away at it. When we can clean that up and some other things at the same time for very little investment. The other one for me would just be, remember that we do have some pockets of HVPD resistance. So that's our Callistos, Explorers, you know, and basically the active that's in Lexar, Acuron, and all that. We have for years been able to not spray our herbicides until the crop was up, and you know, with that, a lot of the weeds were up, water hemp included. There is some water hemp starting to merge, so it's here now. I guess just if at all possible, get your herbicides on before before everything is coming up. That's going to be a tall order in a lot of cases because a lot's getting planted really fast. I guess if you know that you have an issue in your neighborhood, just remember a little bit of dicamba or something like that might be needed to make sure you take out water hemp if it's present. At the very, very least, if you're doing your normal program, do not count on the Callisto, you know, either whether it's straight good product or something, like I say, that's in Acuron, Lexar, you know, Resicor, whatever it is, do not count on it to take out the water hemp. Go back and scout and, make sure we killed them, and you don't want to find them, you know, that you had an issue with the combine later on.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And Scott, I'll mention too, just the, you know, you mentioned the cutworms. I think that's good because we've got a couple of warm days in the forecast here over the weekend. We're going to throw some GDUs at the seed that we put in the ground. But I think a cool down after that. So, I mean, if we continue with these kind of basically seasonal or cool soil temperatures, the corn's just going to emerge really slow and be that much more vulnerable to caterpillars for that much longer. Another thing I wanted to mention too, you mentioned you guys are finding a place to plant too, is just a quick shout out on kind of putting a compaction layer in, make sure we're not doing that with some of the Kelly Diamond tools and the high speed discs I've seen running and stuff like that. You can dry the top out really fast, but we've got to be careful because we've still got some pretty cool soils. We have had some rain. I know it's dry in a cyclical matter, but we've had enough rain that there is moisture in the profile down there. And when the soil is 40 degrees, you know, that also comes up at night and things like that. I mean, there is moisture in the soil, and we can certainly put a compaction layer in that we'll have to deal with for the entire year if we're not real careful here trying to jump the gun. We've got to remember it's only April 12th. So, Kevin, you got anything else to add on corn before we switch over?
So guys are really, really getting going here this week. We've really started to see a lot of planters in the field or at least get started. I do want to add something to what Scott talked about on the cutworm piece. We had a lot of pretty nice weather early, and that caused a lot of these winter annuals to really grow. We got a lot of growth on our chickweed, our henbit, and there is a night and day difference where fall burn down herbicide was applied and where they weren't. So where they weren't, we have all this winter annual growth. Those cutworm moths are attracted to ground cover. So those fields especially would, we recommend putting an insecticide in with that herbicide regardless, but extra important on some of these weedy fields, just because that is where the moths are going to take priority to lay eggs. That's as far as corn goes, that's going to be the primary thing I wanted to mention today.
Sounds good. While you're unmuted and on the horn there, Kevin, let's just start into soybeans. I know there's been quite a few of those going in the ground as well.
Yeah, you bet. So guys, as well, this trend is continuing, we're seeing a lot of early planted soybeans. Some operations may have multiple planters going, getting corn and soybeans in at the same time. And we're also seeing operations with one planter putting beans in first. So there have been some soybeans go in the ground in the north this week. I just want to reiterate, I know we've talked about this a lot, but we want to make sure we're putting that full treatment package on these early planted beans. For our primary disease that we're worried about, sudden death syndrome, so we need to have something in there like Saltro or Olivo, but our other early season diseases as well, we need to get multiple effective modes of action for Pythium, Phytophthora, Rhizoctonia. Typically, when we plant soybeans earlier, it's going to take them longer to come up, and that gives more time for diseases and insects to attack. So We also need to make sure we're throwing in that insecticide component too for our grubs, maggots, and also that first flush of bean leaf beetles.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, Kevin. I figured you'd mention something on seed treatments, so that's good. But yeah, there's certainly a reason it's a trend. It's a great thing to get those beans in the ground and up and flowering before June 20th. You guys, any go on around the horn and kind of throw in any 2 cents that you have on soybean planting emergence, I guess, for you down there, Jesse?
Yeah, we started planting beans there like 16th, 17th of March, and there was a lot of guys by 20th that were 40% planted, and normally I kind of shy away from that, but with us being dry and like Bernie said, there was so much fall and early spring burn down went out, like it planted amazing. Like, and we've actually got beans right now that are, the unifoliates are out there so far along, and with that little rain we got, there's just steadily more coming up. And just like we talked about the pigweeds earlier, we don't have any up right now, but you give us 3-4 good days, 80 degree temps, that looks like we're going to have, they're going to start coming on hot.
Sounds good. Shannon or Scott, you got anything to add on the soybean side of things?
So typically for us, we have a few that go out early beans under irrigation, but typically we're getting our corn knocked out first. But to Kevin's point with, you know, sudden death syndrome, if we know we have fields that are susceptible or we've had known disease there, making sure we're using the right seed treatments on those fields, selecting the right varieties that maybe have a little extra resistance to sudden death. Our seasons for us for soybeans, typically we run longer than most of the rest of the state because we have so many double crop beans. So guys aren't really in a hurry to extend that season even longer. So we'll be planting beans until late July, early August. So the early bean hasn't really picked up for us as much.
Muted, Scott.
Kind of the same as what Kevin said, in the central, a lot of guys are planting corn and beans both at the same time. And some are even leading with beans, but quite a few went in the last 10 days. Again, more on the western side of the state, just kind of getting rolling on the eastern side.
I guess one of the questions I have, Adam kind of mentioned it, you know, we're supposed to warm up this weekend, but if you look at the 10-day, like I pulled up the 10-day for Maryville, even down for Bernie, down there for Jesse. So it's pretty widespread, but you look at as we get towards next week, in Maryville, it's supposed to be 32 degrees at night for 3 days and only 50s in the day. As more guys are pushing these soybeans in, is there any concerns or call outs that we need to be thinking about with this drop in temperature we may have? Especially because it looks like it may have some rain as well that comes with it. And so it's always good for these crops to have a drink of water, but necessarily when it's a cold drink of water, it's not always the best.
Well, absolutely. And so if it's warm enough early to where the soybeans actually emerge and they're above ground, all the growing points are going to be above ground. So if we got a frost or a cold enough temperature to kill any plant tissue, we're going to, you know, we'd be dealing with some dead beans. So that is another risk with planting soybeans early. A lot of times if it's generally cool and the soybeans can, you know, stay underground, and we do have the correct treatments on there, you know, that can protect against those cool, wet conditions. As long as they're not up out of the ground. But if we're dealing with a killing frost and the beans are up, that can be bad news as well.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, Cameron, when I was kind of looking at the forecast. And I think a lot of these beans, I guess, you know, just sort of guessing here and kind of looking at the temperature forecast, I think a lot of the beans that are going in right now will probably be okay because I don't believe that they'll fully emerge before next weekend, with as cold as the ground is. But you know, some of the guys that really jumped the guns and tried to plant some late March beans or something like that are probably at least broken and maybe right under the soil surface at this point. We get a couple 80 degree days, those things will probably pop up and may be at risk, I guess, for a frost or freeze event that I'm also seeing in the forecast. So yeah, I think it's just a gamble that you certainly take planting that early, especially you mentioned temperatures in Maryville. You know, it's like that's a completely different climate zone up there. So moving on, wheat. You guys got any wheat updates? I'll kick it to Shannon first. He's our resident wheat expert.
Sorry to say, I guess I probably better take the wheat lead on this one. So kind of one of the things we were worried about last week, you know, we had that emergency podcast on stripe rust. We have yet, the crop track team, something may change today after we get off this podcast. I kind of expect it to change today or this weekend. We have not confirmed stripe rust in the field yet. There has been reports as far north as southern Kansas, so south central Kansas, just south of Wichita. There was confirmed reports from a K-State extension agent middle of the week. So I have no doubt that the pustules are here. The disease is here. It just hasn't shown up. It hasn't entered those reproductive stages yet. Wednesday, we got a slow half inch of rain that dropped the temperatures into the 50s. Yesterday was 65. I mean, it's ideal conditions for stripe rust development. So, you know, with south winds and that moisture, and I expect us to have heavy dews over the weekend through the night, cools in the 50s. I definitely think it's going to show up. Flag leaves have emerged now. So some guys are pulling the trigger. They're just going to go ahead and say, you know what? There's no reason to risk it. So we're going to put our fungicide on, throwing a little insecticide. We're seeing a few aphids here and there. So adding a little bit of insecticide to that pass as well. And these other guys, we're just going to keep scouting and keep an eye on it, because we're just trying to get by. Because typically once that flag leaf comes out, we've got, you know, about a week. And then the head's going to start emerging. Then we're going to start thinking about a head scab application. So that's kind of where we're at right now with wheat.
Sounds good. Jesse or Scott, either Kevin, I guess you guys just jump in and give me if you've got something different or conditions in your area.
We're not seeing really as much stripe rust here. I know it's down in Mississippi and southern Arkansas, but I'd say our biggest deal is we'll have flag leaves, or not flag leaves, we'll have heads emerging here next week. So we're just kind of waiting it out, and then we'll do our head scab treatment and hopefully roll on.
Up north, we're just starting to see some fields where the flag leaf is just kind of starting to poke out of the whorl. So we're a little bit behind up this way, but as far as diseases go, we're really not seeing much yet. We are seeing some aphids out there, but we're not looking at numbers that are, you know, very alarming at all. So we're kind of at that point. We're just keeping an eye out for things as that flag leaf starts coming out, and just kind of on the watch out for everything coming in from the south.
Kind of the same in central. We've got everybody watching. We did have in the central part of the state, our local agronomist out of Glasgow and Boonville, Taylor Nix, found some pretty suspicious leaves in one field. Shannon and I kind of looked at them back and forth. We didn't see the pustules, but we definitely had it was kind of breaking along in a stripe pattern. So just to be on the safe side, she ran some down to the lab in Columbia, and it was not. So that kind of heightened us up for a little bit, and she and I looked at the field again yesterday, but really didn't see anything suspicious beyond kind of that initial discovery. But we are seeing quite a bit of viral diseases in our wheat. I know that's something we've seen the last few years. So on that same trip, she took some samples, and those take 2 or 3 days to kind of grow out and identify, but I'm suspecting we have, you know, at least one, if not a couple different viral diseases showing up in our wheat again.
Yeah. And I can add on to that. So when the flag leaf comes out, a lot of those viral diseases definitely show up, especially barley yellow dwarf. And we are seeing not a fair amount of it, but we are seeing it here and there. And just so everyone's clear, you know, viral diseases, the fungicide is not going to do anything for us. Looking at variety selection or, you know, figuring out how that disease gets into the plant. In the case of barley yellow dwarf, vectored by aphids, aphid infestations in the fall, through the winter, early spring. So that's where, you know, a good solid seed treatment comes in. And then possibly, you know, this year we had a more mild winter and more mild fall. So the aphids kind of stuck around a little bit longer. So scouting and making those in-season insecticide applications when needed for controlling of aphids to control that disease. Scott, on that stripe rust that Taylor sent in, did they actually test for it or were they just looking at visuals?
I'm not sure how they determined that. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I know a lot of times when I've taken, I should have asked her that. A lot of times when I've taken, particularly fungal diseases in, they'll identify, you know, be it southern rust or anything like that. He'll identify them under a microscope, initially. And then sometimes we'll go on and do, you know, go ahead and test it, which usually takes a little bit of time. She said they were going to go on and test for the viruses. And we were thinking of some of those, you know, the mosaic and some of that kind of stuff. It's what we're seeing. But didn't specify exactly how that was done. So
just curious. I mean, the striping, it looked very, very suspicious.
It was very suspicious. Yeah. And you know, no pustules or anything like that. In fact, when I sent it to you, I thought, you know, almost felt a little silly because I thought, well, that doesn't, it looks like striped rust. It stripes, but it doesn't look like striped rust. But yeah, when you thought the same thing, we wanted to go ahead and get it on over there.
Sounds good. Anything else you wanted to discuss? I know, Scott, you maybe had a thought or two on alfalfa that you had mentioned that you wanted to bring up, that we've already put some insecticide out there.
Yeah. One last thing on wheat, just, as we're looking at wheat, and this is for anybody that's listening to this, any of the folks on my team that happen, you know, that are listening to this, in our, you know, over the next few days, 80 on Saturday, 82 on Sunday, 84 on Monday, temperatures like that can really fool you in wheat progression. So if you kind of have an idea of how the wheat's been growing and you're kind of extrapolating forward as to where you think it's going to be, you know, in a week, this weekend can change that really fast. So if you're looking at something, you know, today, you know, it could look totally different, you know, Monday, Tuesday. I've been fooled a lot of times by that. So just a quick reminder. Yeah, on the alfalfa, a lot of weevils out. I mean, this is an issue every year in first cutting. You know, we're always going to have them. Just wanted to talk a little bit about how I know down south that y'all have treated the, you know, weevils is basically pyrethroid resistant for quite a while. We were still getting control up in our area, really up until last year. And that's when it all fell apart. So we moved over to a more expensive product, a little more focused product, but a very good product. Steward is what we've been using. Lorsban, chlorpyrifos, but you know, most folks know it as Lorsban, was taken off the market, but through some actions, just, you know, over the winter, basically, I think one of the registrants of the product and then some grower groups filed suit and were able to get at least all of that turned around. I can't remember exactly the legals of it, but basically we can use it again, at least for now. So we've had some Steward going out. We've had the generic chlorpyrifos going out. Just wanted to kind of report this past week, had a chance to get out and look at, you know, to kind of judge what kind of activity we're getting. Started by looking at a couple fields. This was over in Callaway County. You know, it was in a relatively tight area, you know, 5 to 10 miles. But nothing was close enough to where a treatment on one field would have affected another. Untreated, we were finding just handfuls of little bitty weevil. Going to the field that was sprayed with a pine of chlorpyrifos about 10 days ago, found some little weevil, but just very few. When we went to the Steward field, we didn't find anything at all. So just as you're kind of judging and you know, managing expectations and what you're going to get. That's very, very anecdotal. I'm aware of that, but it's kind of all I got. keep in mind the rate of chlorpyrifos is a pint to 2 pints, and guys could have could have ran it up to 2 pints, but that knocks you out for 3 weeks to cut. So we knew we were going on the lower side. I think we would have had a little better activity if we had bumped it up. But, you know, when we had those discussions in the past, that's when we jumped back to the pyrethroid. And obviously that's not working. So I always add a lot of, or usually an alfalfa thing to, you know, my weekly articles that I do and any of these things. And sometimes I feel kind of silly because it seems like a really minor crop. But there are periods, including like the last week and a half, where, you know, I think half the state was in alfalfa with the phone calls I received. So I definitely wanted to, you know, pass that information on.
I'll add on the alfalfa side for Stewart specifically. So we've been running Stewart quite a bit, especially since, you know, the ban on Lohr's ban. To kind of enhance control, enhance efficiency, we've been adding NIS to that. We've been seeing a better control when we add a non-IX surfactant to that application. Have you seen the same thing, Scott?
I don't have any experience with. I don't think we did in this case. And if we did, I wasn't aware of it. What kind of rates are you running, by the way?
On the Steward?
Yeah. Do you know?
Around 10 ounces is what we, there's a range on that. You can go higher, but
yeah,
since kind of what we've been standard, and then a quart per hundred of a stoop.
Okay. Yeah, I know this one was, and it was flown on, but it was, yeah, I mean, there wasn't Weevil 1 in there. I've actually gotten some calls. This is kind of silly maybe, but I've got a lot of calls about, ladybugs, or I shouldn't say a lot, but I've got several. So I guess I just, anybody that's on this, you know, at some point today, Google ladybug larva. A lot of folks, we talk about ladybugs being beneficials, but it's really the larva that, I mean, the adults are too, but the larva, I mean, they'll hoover up aphids and, you know, just other things like that. It's just incredible what they'll eat. A lot of folks don't realize that's what they are, though. So when you find them, particularly if you find them in an alfalfa field that's, you know, just getting riddled with weevil, these are the good guys. So, you know, if you don't know what that looks like, just do a quick Google and recognize that, because then you'll start seeing them everywhere once you know what it is.
Gotcha. No, that's a great call out, Scott. What else, guys? What did we miss? Anything else anybody wanted to make sure we got kind of an update on? Okay. Sounds good. Well, I appreciate everybody's time this morning. Appreciate everybody's updates kind of from around the territory. Like I said, today's April 12th. We will be back in 2 weeks with another update. I'm sure everything will certainly have changed by then, looking at the forecast. So should have a lot to talk about. But anyway, like, thanks again, guys, for your time this morning. And thanks to everybody for listening.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Yep, thank you.
Yep, thanks, guys.